community, and a welcome to members of KULA, a component of economic development. Welcome to this meeting. The agenda that we have before us is a welcome, and then it's followed by apologies, and then it's a presentation by KULA, and then it will then be questions, clarity, discussions, a reply from KULA. Then from there, we close the meeting with a word from the chairperson, Mayor Coleman. And after that, we will then go into a consideration and adoption of the committee report on EDD, the budget vote number 27. And that will then take us to the end of the meeting. But having outlined this, let me go immediately into the area of apologies and ask Mr. Godfrey to speak to that item.
Thank you, Chair. We've received four apologies from Honourable Singh, who's doing constituency work, Honourable Wang, who's also in his constituency, Honourable Manamela, who's attending a strategy meeting, and Honourable Khreiling, who's attending the Public Enterprises Committee meeting this morning. The chairperson, Mrs. Coleman and Mr. Ntuli, informed me that they are in a strategy meeting this morning, but they will be joining the meeting later, sir. Thank you, sir.
We will then proceed with the meeting, and the chairperson will join us as she is on the way. She was held up as Mr. Kotre is indicating. And at this stage, we shall ask Dr. Demulepo to introduce his team, and thereafter we will introduce the team of members.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mabasa. Let me start off by introducing the chairperson of the KULA board on my extreme right, Mrs. Nomonde Mapetla, who has graced us with her presence here. We also have got the deputy chairperson on my right as well, Mr. Mtembeni Mkhize. On my left, I have got Mr. Mkululi Mazibuko, our Chief Operating Officer. And then we also have got Ms. Figile Masondo, who is the Manager, Strategy and Business Planning. And as Ntate Mabasa mentioned, my name is Tlakalane Sahamulepo. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And on the members, we have Dr. Ravi. And immediately after Dr. Ravi, we have Mr. Ngonyama. And then we have Ms. Tsotetsi. And then we then have also Mr. Kotze with us here. So we will, but let me ask if the agenda as it stands is acceptable to members, and also the apologies as presented, if they and let me ask members to speak to those two items. Dr. Ravi is moving for both acceptance of the apologies as well as the agenda as it stands. Seconder. Babu Ngonyama, thank you. Ntate Mulepo, the floor is yours to take us through the presentation.
Thank you very much once more. We are here to take you through the overview of the KULA Enterprise Finance key strategic priorities for the 2010-2011, and we will be going through the items as you would see them outlined on the screen at the moment. Let me start off by going through the background that KULA is a development finance institution that reports to the Department of Trade and Industry, and it has got an independent board of directors. It is important as well to realize that after its establishment in 1996, it derived its mandate specifically from the DTI white paper on the National Strategy for Development of Small Business in 1995. And that particular mandate and was actually arrived at to ensure that KULA as a delivery mechanism is a wholesaler. Now, the reason why KULA was a wholesale, an institution rather than a retail, was taken after consideration of the following. The state did not see itself as a direct lender of funding, but rather an enabler to make sure that, the institutions that are available can participate in that space with their help. The government-backed guarantee was seen as the only means that is required to ensure that you bring in the private sector funding through commercial banks and other institutions to ensure that they participate in the SME sector. Now, as a wholesale financier, KULA works through a network of partners, inter alia the commercial banks, the non-bank retail financial intermediaries and other partners to ensure that the SMEs have got access to funding. Since the creation of the South African Microfinance Apex Fund, it was hived out of KULA. Now KULA concentrates on the upper end of the funding gap, which means it provides funding from 10,000 upwards, and therefore we are no more referring to funding of small, micro and medium enterprises, but rather small and medium enterprises. It is important for us to take you therefore through KULA's mandate, vision and mission. You will see from what I have outlined that the main purpose for a DFI like KULA is to make sure that we address market failures. Market failures that are emanating from the failure by the private sector to ensure that they finance the gaps that remain in the market. So KULA, therefore, main focus is the facilitation of access to funding by SMEs, maximizing development impact and ensuring that the organizational sustainability is maintained at all times. Our vision is to make sure that we become a finance partner of first choice to the SMEs, the SMEs, and of course we do that through provision of finance. We have got mentorship services that we provide. We also provide small premises to the entrepreneurs through a network of partnerships, as I mentioned, in order to encourage sustainable development of SMEs whilst ensuring that KULA remains financially sustainable. One would then see on the extreme right that our intention for this midterm period is to ensure that there is value that we actually pass to the society through an increase of products and also making sure that our channels are in a position to reach the market that we are serving. But the overarching element that one sees at the bottom of that screen is that the achievement of that desired impact is envisaged through us making sure that we develop KULA to become an SME bank. KULA's mandate is focused on these three pillars. The first one, as I mentioned, being to promote access to finance. And then, of course, the most important one is development impact. We need to make sure that, you know, we create sustainable small and medium enterprises in the mainstream economy, thereby contributing to the larger economic development in South Africa. And of course, the financial sustainability is always what we have to bear in mind. I thought it would be important for us to take you through the landscape that we cover as Khula and look at the characteristics of the enterprises that we are looking at. You will see that from the survivalist enterprises up to microfinance, as I mentioned, as I alluded to in my previous slide, this is the market that is covered by the South African Apex Fund. Khula then concentrates on the small enterprises and the medium enterprises, and you can see the characteristics of those enterprises in terms of turnover, in terms of the number of employees that it has. The supply, that is the financing needs, one can see that from the micro enterprises, you are start to having, you know, owners and family resources that are used to fund some of those businesses. But the minute you go to small and medium, families, owners are no more in a position to actually inject funding required. And that is where Khula plays a role together with an array of other DFIs, as you can see, the IDCs, the National Empowerment Fund, and the Provincial Development, you know, Corporation. Just again, looking at the role players, one would see the sector that is covered by Khula and what SumUp is doing. And one can see right on that slide that the banking and the private sector is shying away from the very element of the market that Khula is supposed to be concentrating on. I thought it is important for us, therefore, to take you through Khula's current business model. It is a fact that Khula is a wholesale financier with total reliance on an array of partners, and those we refer to as intermediaries. We are looking at leveraging private sector funding through the credit indemnity guarantee schemes and other funds. We are more of a facilitator than a direct lender, because as I mentioned, the role of the state as an enabler rather than a direct participant. And the capitalization structure of Khula is that we require funds from time to time to make sure that we can effectively, you know, invest. Otherwise, if we do not get capitalized adequately, we will end up eroding the capital base of the entity. The financing gap that we are looking at filling at Khula is primarily black-owned and owner-managed formal SMEs. SMEs that require resources of between 10,000 and 3 million, we look primarily at startups and expansionary early-stage businesses, and we focus on the underserved provinces, your rural areas, and the urban poor communities. And of course, it's important as well that we also focus on women-owned enterprises. Taking you through a suite of our innovative financing instruments is that if one looks at the top as a wholesaler, we provide, one can say, almost six products, where through the RFIs we provide business loans, through the commercial banks we provide credit guarantees, the joint ventures we provide equity, you know, funds, and then we also provide pre- and post-mentorships. We also provide business premises, and we manage third-party, you know, funds for other departments. And through our retail model, which is the non-bank and the commercial, you know, intermediaries, they provide those products as I have shown. Of course, of us is of paramount importance to make sure that the development impact with the enterprises that we are funding is to make sure that, among others, jobs are created. We are looking at regional development, economic transformation, and of course in the process, asset accumulation by those enterprises. I just thought I must take you through some of our financing partners so that you can see the network of, you know, partners that we are using, and this cut across commercial banks, cut across private equity funds, and also some of the RFIs that we use all over the country.
Just a second, Mr. Mulepo. A welcome to our chairperson. And as the chairperson takes her position, you just proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Dade Mabasa. You're welcome, Me Matulare Kolme. Thank you. Thank you. Can I therefore just take you through our strategic focus as an institution, starting from where we were primarily providing the credit indemnity guarantees up to where in 2004, Kula then took a new strategic direction. That said, how do we grow the organization's reach and impact in order to better support the needs of the SMEs? Kula changed its target market operationally, and therefore new channels and products were introduced so as to increase disbursement to the SMEs. And in the slides that are following, one will see how we did that. We managed as an organization to ensure that the bad debts and claims that were coming through the indemnity schemes were kept as low as possible. But I would imagine the members will know that from what we have experienced in the past year, from the global economic crunch, indeed as a development finance institution, we are seeing challenges regarding the bad debts and the claims. Public opinion and perceptions about Kula are indeed, you know, steadily improving. People are starting to talk about the things that we are doing. And then to raise delivery further, it is important to note that government approved in 2008 that Kula's mandate should be extended to include the direct lending activities. I just want to take you through our approvals and disbursements for the last 5 years. One would see that we have seen steady growth in terms of our approvals and also what we measure as the impact, which is the money going into the hands of the SMEs through our partners. Our loan book has grown from a mere 559 to currently almost R1 billion. And that is really the impact that we believe we have made. It is important, members, for me to also take you through the challenges that we experience through the indemnity scheme. The banks, irrespective of the level of support that government is giving through the guarantees, unfortunately, they are still not coming to the party. We are seeing a decline in terms of what they are supposed to be doing by virtue of guarantees issued by government, and this is one of the challenges that we are facing. I just want to take you through our SME profile for just a snapshot for 2008-2009. One would see that we are indeed ensuring that money goes into the hands of black-owned enterprises and formal SMEs, but I believe we have not done enough, as one can see with the, you know, the graph there. Also in terms of the spread around the country. And the only solution for us is that once we go direct, it is important that we then become the ones that determine where we are going as an institution rather than over-reliant currently on the intermediary. Over the past 13 years of Kula's existence, I am glad to announce that irrespective of the limitations of the model we are using, we have managed to disperse more than 2.5 million rand to the SMEs. We have remained liquid as an institution, continued to show a surplus each year irrespective of undercapitalization, and we have managed to build up a capital base of approximately 1.2 billion rand. Let me just quickly go through what we see as limitations to the current model. The current model, unfortunately, is creating a gap between us as an institution and the end user. We are also seeing, you know, the limited ability to drive development and control our destinies because of the reliance on people. The model is also not clearly understood our target market. When somebody goes to a bank, they are not seeing the state support for the SME is concealed. And this unfortunately leads to distorted market perceptions about who actually provides funding. And this as well, as a layer, an extra layer between cooler and the customer, one increasing risk, but also cost of delivery and the interest rates that are charged. The limitation to the current model as a continuation is the issue of capitalization. You know, Kula is structured as an administrative entity where we have managed to keep a low overhead structure to ensure that as much as possible of funds are channeled through our partners to the end user. Initially, Kula was capitalized, you know, with some cash and assets of around 330. I want to make the members aware that ever since that particular, you know, capitalization, Kula has never gone back to government for another capitalization. Through investment of what they are making out of the, you know, lending to the end users, we have managed to keep sustainability. So we do not therefore receive an annual grant from National Treasury. The actual amount of available funds, therefore, are very limited, because of us not being capitalized adequately. And what we believe will resolve this issue is that Kula needs to properly have a properly structured balance sheet that will almost have a rolling 5-year investment horizon to ensure that we can then have a portfolio where we invest in strategic equity, you know, investment, high level of profitability to make sure that we continuously subsidize the development initiatives that are given to us and are expected, you know, by us, by government. The financial implications is that since 2004 and 5, Kula on an annual basis managed to alert the shareholder that around this time we are going to have a crunch if we are not capitalized adequately. Because the intention was to make sure that the graph that I showed you, we should maintain that particular momentum. And unfortunately, that has not happened. So if no funds are received and Kula continues its current strategy thrust of ensuring that we grow our loan book, the challenge is that we will continuously erode our capital base because of the losses that we will suffer. So to be financially sustainable, therefore, it means that Kula requires capital injection that would allow us to have a portfolio of those strategic investments. Because when you are in the space where Kula is, there is a need for you to cross-subsidize your developmental, you know, requirements with income that you get from certain strategic investments. But again, at the bottom, we believe that if Kula's articles of association are changed through an act of parliament, it will enable Kula, one, to become a flagship SME bank, but also not to be reliant only on government funding, because they can go out and borrow so as to do what is required of them. I thought it is important for me to take the members through what we call funding versus non-funding. We requested as Kula, through the midterm strategy, the amount that you see on the first line, 300 million, 400, 500 for those periods. I am sad to announce that the only allocation Kula received from government was a mere 120 million rand. Now, without funding, unfortunately, it means those are the levels of approval that we can afford. Because in terms of the PFMA, we cannot continuously commit what we do not have at hand. So, unfortunately, our levels of approvals will have to reduce. But the disbursement, the reason why you see the 476 is that there is a lag between when we approve and when we actually disburse the money. But one can see when we have funding, how much of impact Kula is in a position to make. And I believe more money will be going into the hands of those that need it most in this country. And those are the small, medium, and advanced enterprises. The cabinet in 2008 approved the Kula Direct model. Now, because of the low impact and unsustainability results of the whole thing, and this led the cooler management, the cooler board, to making sure that we submit the direct lending business, you know, case to cabinet. And indeed, December 2008, they approved the cooler direct business case, subject to approval of the business and implementation plan, and how that particular module will be capitalized. In 2009, in the previous portfolio committee on trade and industry, the content of this cabinet approval was discussed. And the portfolio committee confirmed that, therefore, there is a need for us, before we craft the business plan, to embark on international benchmarking studies and also local research. And I am glad to announce that both of those studies have actually been undertaken and completed. I just want to take you through some of the lessons that we learned when we embarked on this international benchmarking study. One is that the government is a prime funder and a key player in SME development in all the countries that we have actually visited. Government support and commitment to SMEs is at the highest level of government. In actual fact, in one of the countries we visited, the head of state, the head of government, sits in one of the committees that decides policies on how to develop small and medium enterprises. And that is the level at which these issues are discussed. Research and development of new products, very key to what they are doing as an institution. They are centralizing risk management processes to ensure consistency on applying your credit, you know, process approval and ensuring that you apply the same procedures and systems across, you know, organizations. They are clearly defined and easy to understand land requirements at line recruitment rather and credit processes. This shows that when you do this, you then end up with the right portfolio of clients. Your success rate becomes even more when you have got this particular approach. Quick turnaround time due to clearly defined loan disbursement processes. They place strong emphasis on credit risk management. This is to ensure optimal recovery rate of loans, because at the end of the day, whatever that you lend, you must make sure that you receive it in order to continuously plow back. Extensive network of branches which enable them to, you know, visit the SMEs and throughout the country. Commitment to SME support at the highest level of government, I think that we need to emphasize. And they provide integrated support, both financial and non-financial, you know, services. The local research findings, you know, Finmark Trust reports estimated numbers that between 10,000 and 50,000 gaps exist for approximately 500,000 enterprises. 27% of those are based in Gauteng. And they further report that between 50 and 250, you know, thousand as well, there is another gap. And that is why in Kula you see us emphasizing that even though we provide a funding of 10,000 to 3 million, there is still a gap below the 250,000 requirement. Poor access of finance in rural areas, because commercial banks perceive that as too costly due to low density in those areas. Banks have to factor cost of capital into their prices, and therefore this ends up making the product expensive to the end beneficiary. And it is also not easy for them to receive loans of below 50, because always commercial banks are looking at security. Inflexible approach to financing SMEs, because they perceive them to be too high risk. Unsuccessful SME lending, one can see that 75% of borrowers are normally, you know, self-employed, especially under the microfinance model, which bases collections in most of the time on salary deduction. About 42% of all credit consumers, as at 2008, the study shows that most of those have got impaired credit funds, which means the banks will forever not look at them favorably. Lack of security, we believe, as Kula, can actually be substituted by, among others, the fact that somebody is paying their rental, their telephone bill, their municipality services, that can actually make sure that you take it into consideration when you look at this enterprise. I want us to go through what we envisage as our way forward in order to roll out the CULA direct lending model. It is important that the legislative framework is there to enable us as an institution to do what we need to do. Organizationally, CULA needs to restructure in order to accommodate the CULA direct model. We need to retrain and reassign some of our staff. And one can see on that diagram that the two operations, the wholesale model and the new model that we intend implementing, should talk to one another. But right at the bottom, the overarching requirement is that CULA needs to be adequately recapitalized in order to live to deliver on those two models. CULA key strategic priorities for the coming year are that we need to re-engineer our current operations. There is a need for realignment of our human capital, and at the end of the day, our cost structure needs to be maintained at the level where it is maintained. At the end of the day, strengthen risk management because we will now be lending directly. But it is also important that CULA plays a role in ensuring that we influence the SME formulation in this country. Our international studies have shown that an institution like CULA needs to continuously be a feeder into the policy formulation in this country. And of course, we need to brand ourselves and make sure that we are well positioned to deliver on our mandate. The budget implications that we want to share with the committee are that without funding, it means we can only afford to do 53 million rand. But if we were funded, approximately 880, those will be our target. And the value of disbursement would be as I have shown. And one can see that from the momentum that we managed to build in the 5 years, unfortunately, it will now be inhibited due to the challenges that I have shown. The impact to the end user, this is the scorecard that we use, is that we need to make sure that 2,000 end users get funding and the facilities that are dispersed to end users in priority provinces, in rural areas, and also in the poor communities in the Gauteng, Western Cape, and KZN, 40%. And as one can see, also to make sure that we cater for where we believe there is a gap, which is below the 250,000 loan. Key elements, therefore, of the CULA direct model is that international study locally has shown us that one needs to have what we call field staff, or you can call them loan officers, because this will ensure close working relationships with your customers. The process of approval is that it is more important to hunt for transactions. You are finding entrepreneurs that are ready. They know exactly what they are doing. Yes, people will come through to CULA. We will work through them with a partnership of other people that we work with, but it tends to take longer. And we are not saying we will not do those deals, because if you can see comprehensive due diligences for larger and long and more complex deals, we believe 25% of our loan term, that's the LT, will be coming through our door. But the regional offices will ensure that they prepare the submissions to the credit committee, and the credit committee, which will be centrally located, will then look at approval. We want the regional offices to own the customer and manage this field staff. They are closer to the customers, and it is better, and they are better placed to make sure that they manage the field staff. Head office will make sure that they establish and manage the product, the credit policy, and the risk management. Customer interfacing, we believe that we need to have a high responsive rate in ensuring that we look after our people's interests. We look after what it is that they are looking for. And the SME support and education, which we do through the pre- and post-mentoring, is that CEDA, as it was established for, needs to provide the pre-investment support and a number of those institutions to ensure that we have got a suite of products to provide a holistic support to our SMEs. How does then CULA position protection themselves through this direct lending model. We need to go into the less urban and deeply rural area. We believe that we need to address holistically the needs of our enterprises, but be simple. And the other thing as well is we need to make sure that we have got, you know, we accommodate people that have got low security. You know, always security is an issue when you go to commercial banks, and we believe this is exactly a market failure that Kula needs to address. And one can then see through many other things that because of our position in the value chain, we will be providing more secondary as opposed to primary, you know, sector, and of course to a smaller extent the tertiary sectors as well. Chairperson, I want to close off with this remark that Kula is a DFI that we believe is dedicated to the needs of small business. Our key differentiator is to focus on startups, small loans, and underserved provinces. Kula has undergone a strategic shift to enhance its focus and delivery, and that we believe that will ensure that we have got maximum outreach and impact through the direct lending to the SME. And we will have a directed use of the credit indemnity scheme, more direct approach to the wholesale funding through our retail financial intermediaries, and utilizing financing partners as well. And capitalization is required so that we can follow through with the strategic choices that we have made to this committee. And I want to thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mulepo. We shall now, do you have any additions from your team?
I think it is important, possibly, to give, you know, honor to our chairperson, specifically on this very big milestone, which is to put a direct model for her to say a few words, and maybe even this year as well to the deputy chairperson.
The floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairman and honorable members, and thank you to Mr. Mulepo. I think we, as the board, would really like to express our appreciation, you know, for the leadership of the various committees of Parliament, especially the Trade and Industry Committee, prior, of course, to the existence of this one, where they actually emphasized to us that where they come from as representatives of constituencies, they hear the cries of the people of this country, saying that they cannot feel the presence of Kula, and that therefore a different model from the wholesale model was actually required for relevance and impact, you know, especially if we are serious about developing the country. And I think that with their guidance and input into a lot of interfaces that we had, we then were able to undertake the studies that Mr. Mulepo has referred to. And I think it's almost imperative that where we see that there are commonalities of experience in this, I mean, one of the countries we visited was Malaysia, where, as I'm sure we all know, the still of the Bumiputra tribe, etc., you know, which resonates, as it were, with the South African experience. The level of commitment of government to the SME sector is amazing. And we thought, amongst all the other countries that we visited, that was the one that we had the most historical things in common, and also the sort of best fit examples in terms of moving forward with Kula as a direct lender. Hence, the proposal to have the model becoming an SME bank rather than a bank which really depends, as it currently does, on the whims of whether or not a particular private sector bank wants to lend or not lend, and where indeed there is no reach, you know, or sub, you know, banks or subsets of the banks in the hinterland, you know, in the kumbus of this world and all of the other areas whose infrastructure in terms of roads and just general accessibility accessibility of a commercial and a monetized economy. You know, there were examples there where they have come up with institutional frameworks and models that enable them to at least identify and reach potential entrepreneurs and bring them to the mainstream economy, and in that way they are then able to bring a cash economy in those particular areas. And I think there's lots for us to learn from them. We would of course count on the support and input always from their representatives here, if I may say, to give us the other things that are germane to South Africa in terms of relevance, because obviously you can't just import a model as is. You know, you have to customize it to your own situation, and that really, you know, is the direction we feel that Kula should be heading. It's almost a passion of ours, and we would want to infuse the same kind of passion to the incoming the board when our term expires. You know, which actually did already. But just that it is so important. I mean, without having direct control on your lending as a microfinance or a small business finance institution, you cannot move, because the principles that are used by banks, the criteria for lending and so forth, has to do with their own primary mandate, i.e. to chase the bottom line. You know, in our case, we have indicated in the triangle that was shown by Mr. Mulepo that one of the things that we are attempting to achieve is a development impact, and that we feel you can only do really by having an SME bank in the country. Thank you. I don't know if Mr. Mkhize would like to add then.
Mr. Mkhize?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, with all honorable members. Protocols being observed. I think I'll make my comment as just an addition to our Chairperson of the Board. We believe at Kula that the time is just right, and is right now, for two things to happen. For government at the highest level to show the commitment into this particular important engine to turn around our country and the hope that is creating sustainable small medium enterprise. And secondly, it's again right that it's done this at the same time with the right capital injection. Capital injection that gives hope that things are turning around for a sustainable economic revival of our country. Why we say the time is right is linked to say, if you look historically, that we have, as a country, embarked on major capital injection on projects that are already recognized by the world power to say we've taken the right decisions. But if we don't complement these with the SME development, the chance that we miss is that if it happens later than now, all the successes that we've done are actually not benefiting the SMEs, but are benefiting much more the so-called multinationals. And we believe we can take any of these capital injections that we've embarked upon over the past few years and the ones that are current. So I think the timing is important, and we're just appealing for two things. One, capital injection, and again, jointly with the highest level of representation of the government to do that risk management. And the models that we've studied, they show that it works so well in all the countries. Thank you.
To members of the committee, thanks, Mr. Kize. Dr. Rabi, I'm noting you. Colleague Sotetsi, am I to note you? I think I must have knocked all of you. Knocking you, Abungonyama, and the chairperson, McColeman, Dr. Rabi.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you for the representatives of Kula. I think all of them gave quite an amount of factual empirical evidence to us here. I'd first like to know success stories of Kura. Can you start, give us some examples? Is it in the manufacturing sector, the retail sector? But I'd like to know, you say you'd like to have a new model, but under the present model, what was the achievements? What successes did you have? Then the second thing, you say that there is a niche for a small to medium bank in this in the South African center. Now, with respect, I think there are some banks that are filling this, like Capitec, for example. It's a new bank that's come up, and they say that they, I don't know whether they exclusively, their client base is from the small to medium sector, but from the small little rural town that I come from, it seems to me that they are really expanding business and they're doing very well. So I'd like to have your views on, you say you'd like to become, will you not be competing with the private sector? I mean, it's very important for government, I mean, not to be referee and player altogether. I just wanted to know that. And then thirdly, Chairman, you said that you'd like to get greater exposure in the rural areas and so forth. Now, I'd like to ask you, I mean, which of the rural areas are you the least prevalent in and so forth? We had a submission from some other parastatal agency that said that it's very difficult to really start businesses in very depressed areas where there's just about no income and so forth. On a parliamentary oversight visit to Chairman, we went to Limpopo province and we visited quite a number of projects there. And I was very impressed to see the general degree of progress and the fact that the people were well blessed, there were no shacks and so forth. So it seems to me that there is a fair degree of success in some of the rural areas, much so more than in other areas that I've visited there. But I'd like to have the views on your success stories and the fact that you say, oh, I'd like to wish you well with your establishment of a new bank, but will you not be competing with the private sector? Thank you, Chairman.
Well, Chair, I think the presentation, I must say, it was quite comprehensive. And I would like to commend the executive for what is a good presentation. I would like to perhaps say, is the priority sustainability, or is the priority ensuring that we are in a position to fund and create a very strong critical mass of entrepreneurs in the country. I would imagine that it's a slightly maybe unfair question, because the answer may be we need both of them. But the context of my question is around the lopsidedness of the priority in terms of focusing more on the profitability and sustainability more than reaching out. This actually is linked, Chair, to the point that has been raised about rural areas. I must say that, and some of us that are coming from those areas have found that our country has not changed precisely because of these conservations. Because of the problems of infrastructure, people in the rural areas continue to be perpetually and marginalized and somehow disadvantaged. And I really feel that an institution like Kula has to walk an extra mile in ensuring that we reach out to this area. My fear about, I fully agree, I must say, Chair, I fully agree, perhaps, though with lack of substantial information which is backing up the proposal for a Kula Direct, but perhaps it is necessary. Because if we are to deal with unemployment in South Africa, if we are to close the gap between the first and the second economy, predominantly those who are in the second economy are black people. That has been in the margins of the economy of this country. And for us to be able to close that gap, we need an institution that will aggressively and get into those communities. But if that institution is going to be even biased, we're not solving the problem. We're not solving the problem at all. One other issue that is linked to the question of Kula Direct, you have Postbank, for instance. Is there any talk or maybe kind of exploring possibilities of working with the Postbank, because Postbank is all over in South Africa, especially in the rural areas? I'm just throwing that as the second one is looking at the question of provinces. Surely there must be something wrong with this, the pie chart that I'm seeing myself, surely. If you look at where poverty, and which is supposed to be the target market of Kula, places like Eastern Cape, places like Limpopo, Free State. Only yesterday, Free State was in the, it was actually flighted on TV. The level of poverty in that province, needless to talk about the Eastern Cape and Limpopo, especially in the rural areas. But if one goes through the pie chart here, it's not reflective. I'm saying myself that it surely there must be something wrong with this. This focus on one or two provinces for an institution like Kula, it actually makes a mockery of spreading. And perhaps, I mean, we're supposed to be servicing the whole country. And that would be my observation. I may be wrong, Mr. Mulepo, but I'm basing it on what I see in front of me. It can't be about winning. We have to walk an extra mile on some of these things and really we have to spread our presence as good. Kula has been there and for some time now, and I want to believe that it has to ensure that it's and the footprints are existing substantially. The other issue is, even as I look at the pie, again, I suppose that the gender question, because if we talk about mothers and women of this country, those are supposed to be the primary target of Kula, because those are the people that actually keep our society cohesive. But I'm looking at the pie here, Chair, and they're talking about 34% and 66% male. And I'm saying that Kula has to do better than this if we're to change and this, because those are the people that are looking after orphans, those are the people that are looking after and street kids, and they go out of their way to pull this and the young kids and try to nurture them to become and the very strong citizens of this country. So in my view, that's another observation, but well, 42% of your pie is KZN, and the rest is the country. And certainly Kula is not about KZN, and I do know that KZN has an institution which is more or less a subsidiary to Kula, or maybe a partner in KZN. And now, Lastly, it's unfortunately we have this, and it's quite an interesting presentation, which may actually take us. We definitely need more time, Chair. I want to suggest we need more time with Kula. And if we're to go deeper on this, because you see my view and my passion with this is that Kula is is an institution which is supposed to service the most needy area or target market of our country. And it is one of those most important institutions. And we need to be taken more in detail on this. And we are being unfair now. And to expect that KULA, we can be able to get everything from them within this limited time. Perhaps we definitely need some kind of a workshop chair with KULA to get into details of this. Thank you.
Honorable Swart, welcome. Comrade Sotiti.
Thank you, Chair. Since the Honorable Gwen has taken all the questions. On the mentoring, you said you do pre and post mentoring, and yet you still experience bad days. So one would like to know the model of your mentoring. And as you say, you are keeping them low. It is difficult for one to measure if you don't have a tabulation to see this is what people are taking from us and this is what you have collected from them and this is what you couldn't collect, so that you can be convinced that it is going, it is improving, or the situation is the same. And on rural women, again, just to add a point that in rural areas, we find that most of the breadwinners, being the men, most of the time, are not around at home. They're somewhere in urban areas, you know, in industries, mining, and you name them. Most of the time, it will be women at home. So I also think that it is unfair advantage or whatever. I don't know how to. Remember, Gulama said all the words that I wanted to say, but I also think that it's not fair on them, on rural women. And on the pie, again, the pie chart here, we have a KZN, which is also mainly rural. So I would like to know how you manage to find it more than other areas that are rural also. I think you should be having the same problem if you really have a problem with the rural development or finding a rural entity. I'm trying to skip what Mamangwenyama has said because we have more or less the same questions here. And on international benchmarking lessons, what good practice have you piloted and what is the status of school now? And from your experience, how do they deal with issues of collateral? And you see, one of the conditions of funding is you know, a good record of payment of municipalities, telecom, and some credits where we buy on accounts. I would like to know, how do you deal with people in informal settlements because they do not have such records? Are they isolated from funding, or you have other means to certify yourself that they are in a position to repay their loans? And on SMB support and education programs, how are your programs structured? And is there any accreditation after people have graduated from this program?
Comrade Coleman.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just my apology. I hope my apology was taken. Okay, thank you. Just to greet the chair of the board and the deputy chair, CEO, and other colleagues, your colleagues from KULA. I have questions that I thought would also serve at the end, perhaps, as a summary of the meeting, when you summarize the meeting. But then, I think maybe let's not put that I want Kula to ask to answer this question. I don't know whether I'm unfair or what, but I just want to find out whether, because you're complaining about if you don't get more funds, you run the risk of not meeting your objectives. At the same time, looking at the pace at which you said you have been doing your job or succeeding in doing your job, vis-a-vis the funds that you're getting from the government itself, is not flowing the way you would have wanted it to flow. And therefore, I'm asking a question, whether are you not living beyond your means? You will answer that question. Also bearing in mind your new, you know, module, your new way of doing things. And also related to that, could you perhaps clarify the meeting whether are there no similarities in the type of work you are doing with that of summer? Yes, and perhaps also let me ask this question of whether you are ready, because there's been a realignment within government, especially departments, new functions, you know, focus, new focus, and so forth. And then with your institution directing or focusing more in the rural areas, well, I've been trying to get the pie chart myself. I'm not sure which page is it, because I came in late while they were presenting. 18. I wanted to check whether that is supported by the chart itself in terms of percentage. 42% is towards KZN, and I think it's related to the question by Mem Sudin. And then when you look at the Limpopo, it's just 3%. And then you look at Free State, it's 2%. Mpumalanga, 4%. Eastern Cape, 8%. And really, then you ask yourself, the biasness you're talking about, where is it here? Hence my question, in terms of the new focus of government, how ready are you within the means that you have been at the moment? How ready are you to respond to the new challenges that will be brought about by the new focus by government? This question is also related to the issue that we raised before around to other institutions like yours, as to whether your objectives, your objectives are aligned to that of the government. Because if we say we want to grow the economy by so many percent, you look at yourself and say, in terms of our contribution, this is our stake, actually. This is our contribution to that overall percentage that would make sure that the economy grows. If we say we want to create so many jobs, do you go with that intention as you assist those emerging entrepreneurs, small medium entrepreneurs, as you assist them front of your mind, not at the back, the issue of job creation. So that as we check their business plans, they relate and they talk to the objectives, the government's goals, objectives at the end of the day. I think that is one question. I might have spent a lot of time on it, but these are all related. The question just that I just asked is related to that. Moreover, that we are focusing more on and the rural development department created now, so that we can focus more. And then I just want to know how have you shaped yourself to be able to respond to that also. Chair, the other questions, I thought perhaps I'll deal with them when we sort of wrap up, because they will perhaps need more information. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me invite for responses, but try to summarize your responses so that we manage our time properly. That one part. But let me also add and say, do you have a register of the small businesses that have approached you? And on that, do you have those that you accepted? In other words, you helped? And do you have those that you rejected? And those that you helped, what were your reasons for helping them? And those that you rejected, what was the reasons of rejecting them? And after rejecting them, do you still have a way of relating to them as potential people that should come back, or they are just thrown away and they are lost to you? And then the other one is it that, but it's the point that you touched, is it that you rely on people that come to you needing assistance, or is it that your strategy is to go out and look for this poverty, and in seeing that poverty, and then say, call meetings with those poor communities so that the initiative is yours? Do you work with churches, NGOs? Do you relate to children that are living in the streets? You know, in other words, certain target groups. Do you say, we want to help this target group? And then in all this, what is the contribution of the board? What is the function of the board on Kula? You know, how must we appreciate the board? What is the impact of the board? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks again to honorable members for the question. I think being the deputy chairperson of the board, I'm going to talk too much more strategy, and I'll touch very little on operations, and leave it to our executives to be doing that. Probably the last one becomes the first, because it relates to the structure of the organization now and going forward. The function of the board of directors of Kula is to first understand the mandate of the state and the role that Kula have to do in our society at large. Take that, get into the strategy together with the executive, and give direction of how do we impact the Kula to a developmental state. And that is very key. Again, I'm just going to jump into that. Maybe to be practical, for some of these things, you could answer them from an academic perspective and think that this is the role of the board. Maybe the right way of expressing that is that I'll talk about this current board. since the Kula was established, the board went into the role of making sure that Kula is addressing what we call market perceptions. In other words, we said as a board, how do we make sure that any member of you know, the South African Parliament, when it gets into a plane and the person says, I'm from the rural area in that area, and I know the government is supposed to be funding SMEs, but I don't have impact. And therefore, we address those market perceptions, make assessments where people are saying that we don't know when Kula assist people in the rural area. And that was done, and we've got a document that was actually done when we look at how Kula has been operating since 1993. And then in 2003, when we then took over, there have been significant inroads into that. And some of them, the inroads that we are now sitting between 1996, which is 13 years ago, and now, where we then said, we need to review, we've been talking about this board to say, that if need be, we cannot see that having our people in the poverty level that are there at the moment. We talk about entrepreneurs at this level who are saying that we have the skills and we are willing to turn around our country. And we are sitting in these areas that are very urban and are rural. And how do we turn that around? And this is how now we say that even if it needs to, let's really look at the act and make sure that people can be able to access finance. Because the core business is actually to allow people that want to contribute in the changing the lifestyles of their own people, and those are entrepreneurs. Not at the level where SAMAF is operating, for SAMAF is about the survivalist. I think Mr. Blepo was showing the chart. In other words, any person that needs to survive who relies on government to do that, then SAMAF grows. But any person that says, I'm not waiting for any handout, I'm not sitting in the street as a street kid, but I am an entrepreneur. I'm saying that I want to play my role to meet the government. All of that I need that stops me from turning this country around. From the level where the pie chart says 42% of our funds went into the so-called the white sector of the society, to a level where we're saying now it's going to address gender issues and women. And what I'm saying, I'm doing that again, is that the chart that we all referred to, which is in page 18, maybe if we look at it in perspective, there are four leading provinces. I won't even go into the other area. Leading province in disbursement is KZN at 42%. And the second province is Limpopo with 19%. And the third province is the. Sorry, the first one is 42% KZN. That's right. And then the second one is Limpopo with 19%. Third one is Gauteng with 17%. Probably I'll leave it at that. And then the fourth one is Eastern Cape with 8%. So that really has been the spread. Then maybe let's talk to the pie chart, what it says. It says since 1996, when the mandate was saying that get access to finance, but play a role as a facilitator for the bank to actually do the lending. This is what you get. And it makes sense because, again, if I was a bank and I'm not necessarily Capitec, I would actually be looking at areas where I've got enough infrastructure. I would say in Devon I have infrastructure. I would say in Western Cape. Actually, if you look back, not in 2008, 2009, where the situation where Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Devon were leading in terms of people that were benefiting from Kula. And this is purely because you're using the banks, and the banks will use their infrastructure system. They're not going to create special infrastructure for government to access rural. Now, which is exactly what we're saying we cannot do business as usual by using the same entities. For us to have an impact, we require government to be able to allow Kula to go direct. And going direct is saying, let us go to direct to Eastern Cape. Let's go to direct to Mpumalanga. And you can also have examples where we already started to do that. And we've got a program called Agwanze, which is operating in Mpumalanga, in the Malelane areas, and again, not in Elspeth, but in much more the rural parts of the of the word they're saying, that how do we integrate in bringing the private sector, that is sugarcane processing organization of Mpumalanga, to benefit the women of the area? That's where the Agwan has been. But it hasn't been, is it part of this one, Agwan has not come out here. So in your next program, you show more women again moving forward. And by the way, with the Kula Direct, as board members again, we said, we put in place to say, we're not waiting until we can get government injecting the right amount to get us to lend directly to rural areas. We're saying the realignment of the focus of rural for the government, as the Honorable Chairman of the PC was referring to, we're saying let's start now with limited resources. Which is why we are saying that we are going in such a race that, and the direct approach, that we run a risk of eroding our capital. So the issue now is saying that we believe that the asking for capital is not an option where we say, what if we don't? We say that the rural communities and people that are saying we're entrepreneurs, because they are demanding, they are saying, give us access, and which is a nicer one. You know, we talk about people that don't say that, just give us money. They're saying, lend us money, we'll pay you back. So that's not a demand of the internal, we're not talking about operational demand, but we're talking about people that are saying, please lend money to us, we'll help this country to turn around. Now, when you do the lending direct versus competition to the bank, when I remember, we are making studies that we've done, very quick ones, to say what happens to the rural communities of the northern part of Brazil. We're not talking about Sao Paulo, the rainforest of the country. The ability for the world to start buying directly from the rural communities the products that they're using. And government then went on to say, let's create the bank which is known as the Northeastern Bank. And that bank has got a clear focus. So it says, your likes of the commercial bank, let them operate in your Sao Paulo's and Rio's. But government, when government goes, it goes in the areas where they're not. Now, going back to our pie chart on page 18, therefore, we're saying that that's where government is going to go, to say, why banks are operating. Government will make sure that the Eastern Cape, the Limpopos of this world, and the Mpumalanga will be the areas which are rural, and by going rural, you automatically address the gender issue. Because, as the honorable member was mentioning, men, they are likely to go and search for job opportunities where they exist. Whereas women, go in rural, they are relying on entrepreneurial spirit in some of the areas which we focus on when you look at other boards of the countries that are about our size, actually half of our size. They instill the entrepreneurship spirit, the spirit that says, I will go and we will in our area, create a concept that says, every family must have a value-add project that should be backed by government finance. Now again, talking about what sector is Kula focusing on, is it manufacturing and services? Here we're talking about people that are saying that we have the God-given pieces of land which are rural where we are. We'll use those, which is, I'm making an example of the rainforest. We'll use those, whatever resources are, and create clusters of equivalency that the Bongo will be different from Eastern Cape, because it's excellent in its own way. So if you analyze it, you say, what is it that makes Mpumalanga tick? There's sugar cane, there's fruit, there's so many of them. And you use those elements again that are saying that women are there, but you're making them to add value. Not just to be a labor force to some kind of a farming area where they're coming in to harvest. But they take those harvests and they start to turn them around and be sold directly. I think I'm just going also to touch on the few ones which are what I was wanting to talk on, Honorable Member Advocate Mark Munyama. I believe that the focus on the creation of strong entrepreneurship versus sustainability in the model that we've gone to study is that by focusing on supporting entrepreneurs that are sticking their hands in the country, that they, all that we need is an opportunity to be lended money. It actually addresses the sustainability, because you combine that with your risk management, which we've put it together, and therefore you are making sure that you lend and you get your money back and you roll back that money, and then you can lend more of them. And those, again, we then have a register of the SMEs that we have gone out together. But how we're doing that is we're doing that with some of our partners that are agents who not wait for people to look for us, but who go out in the rural area and say, this is where you are, and you create that register. But again, is that there is no person that gets rejected who only relies on government to get funds. And what we're talking about now, we're talking about entrepreneurs. Maybe we have to stress that Kula, now and going forward, needs to have a clear focus that if there's somebody that says, I'm a street kid and I'm knocking at the door, you then say, go to Sama. If somebody that, I am a church organization, we just need funds maybe to put up benches, we say, go to an entrepreneur who then submits to Kula and say, my business is to supply furniture, and I need funds to be able to run my business. And I'm sitting between the bracket of 10,000 to 3 million for my ability to be able to deliver them. Because the focus is entrepreneurs, and it's a clear focus. And therefore, it does not compete with the Capitec of this world. The Capitec, they will be looking at much more the unbanked sector. People that have been missed out by your third bank, their bank, and your upstart. And Capitec will say those. But could I say, we are not about addressing the unbanked, but we're about the mandate giving access to finance to the entrepreneurs.
I think I will stop on that unless there's any other one that I can say. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Just to mention three things. I think that perhaps the one that one would like to talk to Honorable Chair is the role of the board. I think just to correct the history, we got involved from 2003, you know, with Kula. And prior to that, I mean, Kula was a pariah organization, if one may so put it, in terms of the hue and cry that we found when we started as this board. People didn't know about Kula, what they knew, they didn't like, and there were no strong relationships between Kula and the banks. It is true that the banks don't always embrace the project that come from, you know, emerging small businesses particularly. I think in some instances what we found is that they just do the barest minimum in order to, you know, to meet up with their CFI requirements, but not as a core focus. One wants to say, for instance, I mean, Itala was assisted by Kula, you know, to set up. Kula works with Region Bank. There are also, some of the high fashion houses, what you call that, Stone Cherry. None of them will ever say, once they are rich and famous, and the children wear those big goggles, which are nice from Stone Cherry, they will not say, we were started up by Kula. All they will say is they are now on the ramps of New York and they are a known brand. But such businesses, for instance, were financed by Kula. And I think perhaps we don't talk enough about, you know, the impact that we have had at a level where you have one young black entrepreneur, for instance, in the case of Stone Cherry, being started up and mentored through the Kula mentorship program to the level where she now can advertise and have agents that actually model her clothes in the ramps of New York. We also have assisted in the setting up of the Kubuletu shopping mall. So there are many things that, certainly in the time between, you know, the start of Kula, and I would want to say more particularly during the tenure of this particular board, because our concern was that we were kind of thrown in the deep end where there was a lot of public unhappiness around Kula and its impact. And we said, no, we'll go for it because it's a necessary project in the life of this country. Now, also, just in terms of competing with the Capitec, some of these banks address more the consumer requirements. We are focused on entrepreneurs. So where sometimes you find that a particular institution, be it a church or a women's group, requires social investment assistance, we do assist in redirecting them to the appropriate channels. But I think we want to focus on the mandate of enabling entrepreneurs, which is really Kula's mandate. And perhaps in so saying indicates that the reason we want want to have a direct lending proposition, which thankfully has already been approved by government. It's more a question of shaping the model such that it best addresses the needs of entrepreneurs, underlying entrepreneurs. Not, you know, I think maybe a more direct way of putting it would be to say there are issues of poverty that are more directly addressed by the Department of Social Welfare. And where that happens to be the case, and somebody mistakenly thinks, you know, I belong to the poor group, let me go to school, we would say, no, such and such an effort would be best addressed by social welfare. But we are actually about entrepreneurship. The SME conference in 1995, which was held in Durban by the then President Mandela, actually was very strong on the idea that entrepreneurship has died in our country because of the history that we all know, and we want to revive that. And FULA was one of those institutions that started as a response to that particular conference. It's about entrepreneurship. So where somebody, be there as a child or a rural woman, and they want to start a business, then you get involved. But if they want to support the uniforms of the Mothers Union, we would probably say go to such and such an organization which has got CSI involvement for such issues. We are about enabling entrepreneurs, business people, small business people to access finance. And I think that's probably a message that we want to keep repeating. And we have made very laudable successes in a number of provinces. One of the other key things, just as a closing one on my side, on the issue of the gender, we are concerned, and I think since we got involved in 2003, there has been a gradual increase in the number of women entrepreneurs that have been assisted. I mean, I'm citing, for instance, this young fashion lady with the stone cherry. And the issue really being that we can't say one thing, and especially the chairperson is a woman, and then be seen to be financing majority male-owned businesses. So the trend, you know, if we were to look at the more detailed presentation, actually has been upwards, because initially it was the men who were in the towns coming to Kula, making demands and being assisted. So we said, no. We need to step back and address the core of the matter, which is ensuring that that rural woman and that woman, even in an urban area, who will not, without the permission of her husband, actually be given a loan. So we've done a lot of advocacy work as well, just in terms of saying we are all citizens, we are empowered by the establishment of Kula to also access or avail, as Kula avail funding to women entrepreneurs as well. And we keep having to say women entrepreneurs, because that's where the rubber hits the road. It's about entrepreneurship. The other matters do get dealt with, and we do assist, by the way, in referrals and so forth. We do also work in conjunction with CEDA, which provides the non-financial support, i.e. your training and mentorship and so forth. Obviously, I mean, they did have their own startup problems, but I mean, now we are really on the roll in terms of working together to ensure that we provide a comprehensive, you know, level of support to emerging entrepreneurs. Thank you.
Yes, I think I'm really going to just touch on those elements that I believe. I think the chairperson and the deputy have tried to cover a number of things. You know, just Dr. Rabi to mention another thing, the issue of Spear Wine Farm. That is actually funded by Kula. In Lublin, business competition, Kula is actually a funder of those things. And I think indeed many others. We've got Postnet outlets where a black woman currently has managed to grow the outlet to find, you know, in the Pretoria area. So we can really go on and on to mention some of those examples that that shows we have done, you know, an impact. The rural area, we have got this Kula Agwanza Farm, the TSB, you know, the sugar area in Malelani. September 2009 up to December, Dr. Rally, we have managed to inject 22 million rand into you know, smaller women that are, you know, having businesses, I mean, smaller businesses, you know, led by women with loans ranging from 10,000 rand to about 300,000. To date, about 1,000 entrepreneurs have actually been empowered through that particular, and we are looking at rolling out the same thing in the sugar area of KZN. We are looking at doing that in terms of the, you know, pines and all other areas in Limpopo. We believe we are making an impact. But again and again, currently our wholesale model is that we are dependent. We are dependent on other people ensuring that we reach our target. You will see in the scorecard that we showed, there is a specific target that says, in as much as we are supporting black-owned enterprises, women stand up to say, we must make sure that it's not just about black-owned enterprises. Women must become a function of them. And it's a deliberate, you know, target that we put to make sure that those intermediaries concentrate on that specific one. Can I then just maybe touch on the question raised by the chairperson of the portfolio committee, are you not living beyond your means? Chairperson, I don't believe so. Kula has managed throughout its existence to get one capitalization when they were started in 1996 and the second one in 2002. Every cent that we are making, we plow back into the entity. That is why we have managed, Chairperson, in 13 years to distribute 2.5 billion rand in the hands of those people that need that particular money. I believe we have indeed become a responsible citizen in this country in ensuring that in as much as we are not well capitalized, the little that we make, we continuously plow it back to make sure that the SMEs are supported. Are you not having any similarities with SAMA? Chairperson, if you remember, the Apex Fund around 2006 was taken out of Kula to say, we believe there is a gap where women who are hawkers, women who are running small businesses, selling meat at the corner street and whatever, they would be better served by having an Apex Fund that would look after them. We have used the services of an entity called Maran. Most of you will be aware of it, which is using the Grameen model. And I believe that that is the space that farmers must play. Group lending, making sure that you are really at the lower end of the market. So, indeed, there are no similarities. But whether it is better placed where it is or not, I think we cannot, you know, say whether they should actually come out. But we believe as an institution, they have had their teething problem, and we are sure that surely as they came before the committee, they mentioned how they are dealing with these issues. How ready are you in rolling out the direct lending? Chairperson, I believe that Kula is more than ready. We have done the, you know, the benchmarking. We are saying, how can we utilize a network of partners that we are having, the post bank of this world, to make sure that a woman in Hamalepo, a woman, a business person, you know, in Ituja, can actually get access. They don't have to go to an APSA or a net bank. They can go to a post bank. They can possibly go to a particular retail store to make sure that the money are actually, you know, dispersed from there. And we are having the same intentions with all other DFIs. One of the developmental impacts that we are looking at is saying we need to create jobs, not only just jobs, direct jobs that are sustainable, and I believe the country is saying decent jobs. That is what we are all about. And when we put our target, one of the elements of those is to say, how many jobs are we creating? How much money goes into the hands of the end beneficiary? And I think that is really what measures our success. Irrespective of the limitations of the wholesale model, I believe Kula can really stand here this morning and say, we have managed to make an impact. Thank you. I will just ask Nkululu quickly to talk about other operational issues as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
The question asked by Honourable Member Wanyama about, you know, collaborations with the post office. We have already started engaging with the post office, and one of the challenges that the post office has in terms of procurement, I mean, there are certain items that they procure, and the post office is of the view not just about somebody, you know, buying a bottle from company X and supplying to the post office, but it's in terms of manufacturing some of the items that are utilized in the post offices. So we're already speaking to them about that. We also will be engaging with the post bank to use the post bank as an origination office when we go the direct lending route. In terms of the mentorship program, there is a direct relationship between the level of mentorship provided and the levels of bad debt that you can provide. But with the status of the economy, you can still provide the mentorship, but if the economy is bad, the economy is bad, and you will have or suffer some of those losses. The mentorship that we provide is a targeted one, and it's targeted especially to those guys that have been funded through the credit indemnity product. That once the indemnity has been approved by the bank and the facility has been disbursed, we as Kula appoint a mentor to make sure that the money that is disbursed appropriately, that the certain interventions that are put in place to assist the SME in terms of their business. And we also work very closely with CEDA in terms of allowing the people that we funded to attend the various programs that that CEDA runs.
I mean, another level, Honorable Sotesi, just to give you the comfort. If you look at the claims that are made through the credit indemnity as a percentage of our total loan book, we are looking at around 4%. And I believe that we have managed to keep it as low as possible due to the interventions that our COO talked about in ensuring that it's not just about making money available. You want to follow up and address the deficiencies that you pick up once a particular entrepreneur has been assisted.
What we'll do now, we'll take a very few comments or questions from Mr. Ngonyama, and then the chair. Then from there, a very short question or comment from Neto Tetsi, and that will be followed by the chairperson, Meg Coleman, who will then be summarizing and also expressing the last words from the committee. In that order, so let me invite Mr. Ngonyama.
Well, thank you, sir.
But also, when you respond to them, also please respond briefly on what work we are doing on cooperatives. Thanks.
Well, Chair, you covered me with that last comment. And on one of the points, and on co-ops, the next one is hand-holding. What I refer to as hand-holding. I am impressed by what I've read here, which refers to the hunting expedition that you refer to for the appropriate clients, I suppose. And maybe it will address some of the distortions that we have observed here when we actually go that route. The next one, Chair, is the concealed support and which the input is referring to. What I've found myself as an observer at a distance, branding that you refer to here is fundamental for Kula to succeed. You have to brand yourself. It cannot be through meetings of this nature that we get to know some of the success stories that you're actually articulating. It can't be. You can't stand in any mountain in this country and let everybody understand your success stories. And your success stories will be inbuilt within the branding strategy that you need to come up with. That branding strategy, as far as I'm concerned, Chair, we have a national and a broadcaster in South Africa. I believe that there must be a special program that Kula should be initiating with the national broadcaster, and to try and flight and articulate and the criteria and everything that goes with Kula and institutions close to Kula like SAMEF, for instance, and partnership between Kula and SAMEF, because because KULA cannot exist in isolation from an institution like SAMEF. It's supposed to take output of SAMEF to actually move towards KULA. And so that from there, we build another ladder that takes them to the higher level. And that's now on the question of branding and what I would refer to as market information. Because people in general, especially the entrepreneurs, may not be in a position to understand the opportunities that are there. And KULA, through this branding process and sharing of information through the national public broadcaster, and that they would be a need to actually. And Chair, South Africans are so much used, especially the poorest of the poor, to campaigns and movements, creating that spirit, that vibe. And you can't be able to do that if we are to come up with the entrepreneurial movement that we are yearning for in South Africa. Look at what is happening with the Somalians that come to South Africa. They come here within 1 week, they open shops, further shops, and somewhere there in that corner and so on. They go there, they buy business. We have to learn, draw lessons even from such and the community. It's precisely because this spirit and enthusiasm is not there and amongst our people, and we have to give this hand-holding approach in my future. If we are to create this movement, which South Africa really so dearly needs at this point in time, because there's no way that we can address the high unemployment rate that we have without that. The last issue, Chair, is the question of the premises. The premises, you refer to the premises here, it's another passion with me. Maybe, and a humble suggestion, so that you have a very strong impact and have strong presence that is identifiable, that can actually make sure that people draw some lessons. In the old days, in the homeland, not everything in the homeland that was done was completely that you can poo-poo right now. If you go to a homeland, there were what was referred to the small and the industries, and that used to be located perhaps in the outskirts of townships, where you are going to find welders there, you have glazers and so on, carpenters and so on and so forth, located within those, closer to their families. And that, to me, is something that we can actually try to resuscitate. And these industrial parks, or maybe small, medium enterprise parks in some of the areas. And again, I would dare say, Mr. Mlepo, again, that would be maybe something that we can try to explore, maybe in the rural areas. If you go to places, you refer to Grameen, Bangladesh, for instance. If you go to Bangladesh and look at what BRAC is doing there, and with regard to some of those things, and it's so beautiful. And that's what I would like to. I suppose the expectations are very high from KULA. From day one, it was expected to do so much because of the need. And I can't agree with you more, but there is a dire need, and therefore more injection and to your capital. And in my view, there's definitely that. Yes, I do believe that there's a need for this KULA Direct. And I've heard you saying that you've done your study on this one. And I hope you've done your study. And so that at the point that was raised by Dr. Raghi, and it's actually well considered. Thank you.
Mentor Tetsi?
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, I think one of the main objectives of this committee is to narrow the inequalities in as far as the wealth is concerned. And I believe KULA has the same mandate. And for us to satisfy ourselves if there is progress, we need to get a breakdown in terms of race, gender, the type of business that is run by the beneficiary or beneficiaries, and the amount that has been funded. And also to check if we have offices in all the provinces, also to provide information regarding the address, physical address, so we can disparities. I still don't get it right, really. I'm not denying the explanation, but I still don't get it right. And chairperson of Kula, we know that where there's a woman, other women will benefit. But it's not always the case. There are times when you climb the ladder and forget about other women. So through oversight, we'll confirm what you are saying. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will then have with questions as well as ways of closing this item from the chairperson, but also the graph says and other, you know, on page 18. So I'm curious to find out what is the other if we have 9 provinces. What constitutes the other? And why is Northern Cape a zero? Thanks. Over to the correct chair.
Thanks, Chair. I thought perhaps they will answer and then after their response will then wrap up and make a summary, but I wanted to ask you other questions too. I think this, I wanted just to get, you know, as Kula is responding or as they respond to the questions posed, I got a bit confused around the issues of funding. You know, on page 19, as your achievements, you are indicating there that you have continued to show a surplus each year, irrespective of undercapitalization. I just want you to expatiate on that further on that point. And then your disbursement of 2.5 billion vis-a-vis your approvals versus disbursement chart on page 15. I understand, I wasn't here when you explained this to me, but then I understand that you're saying the discrepancies on approvals and disbursements as a result of financial funding challenges. If it's correct what I had, then I just want to link that to the issue on page 19 that I just mentioned. Going back to the pie chart, you said to respond. Unless you are saying the like what I heard the chairperson saying of the board, unless you are saying other improvements are going to be, you know, indicated in the annual report or something else, because maybe these are issues that you are still coordinating as part of your report. If it's so, that's okay, but I really get worried. Because what you say and what is here is different. I just want to understand further the percentage of this pie. One, the rural population percentage vis-a-vis your reach out percentage. Or what you can call a percentage spent in each province. We know that KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, while also mostly rural, but what's the percentage that you are responding to of the rural population you are responding to vis-a-vis what you have already spent in that province? I'm happy that Limpopo, because your yellow color is similar to that of 3% of other. So that's why maybe one was confused. But still, I think it's important that we understand in all these provinces as to what you're responding to. That will also be the case for the pie on women and female male, you know, reach out. And the, you know, what I don't understand also is white and black percentage share there. Because in terms of our South African statistics, population statistics, it's quite clear that there's a very limited, small number of white population vis-a-vis that of black. But then in terms of, that's why I was asking that question earlier on, as to whether you are responding to what to the objectives of government. And perhaps share with us, why is it so, are we moving so slowly towards, you know, blacks instead of, you know, trying to bridge the gap? I'm a politician, I understand the global picture, but I want to hear it from your own perspective. Maybe you will make it clearer, because you are the people who are really on the ground implementing policies. Women are more in South Africa. We are more than 52%, and we can't sit and be happy that we are the, we have reached 34%. And the other thing that you need to really clarify also is the issue around the 10,000. Is it not for the survivors? Is that 10,000 not classified under survivors business? Yes, and you remember that you're funding from 10,000 to 3 million, That's why I was asking the question, whether are you not duplicating the work of summer? Yeah, Chair, I think let me pause there with the question.
Thank you, Ed. Before you come in, Dr. Mlepo. Just respond to two questions which you can respond to briefly, and then the others, please respond to them in writing, but also make a commitment to say, I assume, how many days will you need to send the written responses? Should we say Tuesday?
Well, now you say it's a Monday.
Yes.
We have holiday. So can we do it
Thursday?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Monday or Wednesday.
Now we can give them 2 weeks. Sure.
We can give them 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think two weeks is there.
Okay. Let me start with the chairperson issue just about this surplus and undercapitalization. One of the things that we believe Kula managed to do is, with a low, you know, operating structure, every bit of what we do, we are managing to actually reinvest it into the entity. And that is why I'm talking about the fact that we have not received major injections since 2002. Yet the surpluses that I'm talking about, we then plow them in, over and above other returns that we make on, you know, investments like property and so on, to make sure that we continue to offer loans to the end beneficiaries. Now, let me just answer the issue of the 2.5, as you say, you know, compared that to the actual loan book. What helps us with dispersing 2.5 is the actual turning of the money. When you lend, you are in a position to turn that money over a period of years so many times. And that is actually what helps you in ensuring that as you disperse, you are actually dispersing more. For instance, let me give an example. You offer 300,000, and if that 300,000, the entrepreneur pays that after the contract ends, which is fixed, it means you can lend again, and you find that in a year's time, you are in a position to can lend that twice, you turn it around twice or thrice. And that is where we calculate the cumulative amount of money that we have actually
passed on to the end beneficiary. Remember as well, when we talk about the guarantee, they see it as a contingent liability on our books, but the actual physical money is actually by the commercial bank. So that helps us in ensuring that we leverage on the commercial banks to actually lend the real cash while we stand behind them, which means if there is a failure of that particular enterprise, you first have to realize the security, and then only whatever that you're not realized, to the extent that we covered it, we will pay it as cooler. So that as well helps us because we are leveraging on them to lend the actual cash, and our role is purely to stand behind them and ensure that as the claim comes, we only pay to the extent to which we actually, you know, have covered them. 10,000 to 3 million rand. You are correct in saying, is that not really the, and we are having discussions currently with some, to say studies have now shown that possibly we need to be moving that up to possibly around 50,000. But when you look at some of the loans that we have done, for instance, this Kula Akwanza, you find that you have done around 7,000 rand loans, around 5,000, 8,000 rand. But it is not indeed majority of what we are doing because you start seeing people from around 50,000 going upwards in the small and medium that we are operating. And as an internal arrangement, now that we report to the state ministry, already there are discussions to take a policy decision to the shareholder to say how do we make sure that SAMA moves its cap to the right level where they can help the survival. I just thought I should address that, and then I'll ask Mkululi to talk about the issues of, you know, premises as addressed by Honourable Ngonyam.
Mr. Mulepo, let's not do that.
Okay.
Let's get everything in a written
form, okay.
Because we will get into a danger of we are already on in another item's time. I'm now handing over to the chair.
If not wrong, the chairperson
was just saying he wanted to say something last for 2 minutes without having a
question. Okay.
Sorry, thank you, Chair. It was really, and I think he actually covered it. I wanted to go back to the 300 million and how we've turned it over a number of times. And also just to say that in terms of what we have observed in both the countries that we visited and the death studies and also internally in South Africa, it looks like we have no option but to go direct if we are to have a meaningful impact. We've tried the whole thing. It had limited successes, and we will expand in the response, in the written response about that. But we just want to say we are counting on your support for Kula Direct and Viva Kula Direct. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The chairperson will now make some remarks.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mabasa, for standing in for me. And thanks to Kula, actually, for the responses and the presentation. I just want to say to Kula, we are aware that you are still realigning yourself, which is very important. But what I wanted to emphasize on is around the issues of, you know, there's now a new, the IPEP 2, which calls on everybody to refocus so that we really build up industries within South Africa and to rely on institutions like yours to really assist in that, because it means we are going to build something out of nothing. Mem Sotet was talking about coaching, mentorship. Sometimes some of the countries that you might be talking about have done miracles because they started some of these companies or entrepreneurs from nothing. They mentored them until they reached a particular level. And that's the important intervention that the government can make in any society, which is very, very important. I wanted also to say, you know, the way you talk, and as I was once an MEC for several years in a province, and you see, you listen to what your local people say and what you are saying, you know. It's like you're talking from different, and what people complain about is like you have two institutions or three institutions in one. Hence, the issue I'm going to raise, that of training, importance of training, so that you are able to talk the same language and to respond in the same manner. And that you perhaps look at your mechanism. I don't know what mechanisms you used, for instance, for monitoring, you know, the way your people serve the local people and the message they are communicating to people, because, you know, Kula doesn't have this negative image out there because you are doing badly. It's just because of a mere service. Because if a person from the rural area goes to a, you know, in a desperate way, I mean, because they are forced to go there because of their situation. And then they go at length and spend money, spend energy, you know, their time in developing something only to be told, go back, we can't assist you. Even if they know it's a small thing that they need to assist those people with, they don't. So it's important that perhaps they, you, I don't know whether compassion is something that you can teach a person, I don't know. But there are certain things that when you look at recruiting a person, you must look at, so that those people who continue monitoring also, whether they continue behaving in that manner. Because sometimes we prepare ourselves for an interview. As soon as I pass an interview, I continue, you know, doing things the way I want to do them, and not being led by what the organization wants me to do. I think that's important. And perhaps if you can assist us in the information that you'll be providing that the Mr. Mabas was talking about, you please make those breakdowns of profiles, community profiles, because they would assist us in monitoring the impact, the real impact that you're making on the ground. I know that Minister Patel is very, very passionate about the work of the GFI. And I think he's looking at giving his own input into the work that you've already done. And we are really looking forward to getting your strategic plan, your formal strategic plan. That will assist us in really assessing the work, because you've been doing the work even before. When we consider our annual plans around September, I'm not sure whether you are expected to submit during that time. But if you have submitted by then, we will be able to, you know, get a sense of where you're coming from and therefore understand the presentations that you have made in full. I agree that we need more time to engage. This is the matter that was raised by Mr. Nguyen. We need more time, and we will obviously create within our program space for us to interact even further. These are the issues I think that I thought maybe we should wrap up with on, and before we allow you
to excuse us so that we can continue with our meeting. Let me formally thank you. Chairperson, I think we are seeing you for the first time as the deputy chairperson. And you're saying you've already ended your term. And perhaps I'm not sure what is going to happen next. But I can so long wish you all the best in implementing the new model. CEO, we have met before in other committees, and thank you very much for your presentation and for, you know, making this presentation to be as simple as it is together with you, Chair. Members, may we then excuse members from Kula so that we can continue our program. Business card. Thank you very much, members. Can we continue with our meeting? We are done with the presentation from Kula. We are now supposed to consider the report on the budget for the department, both the budget and the stretch plan document. Ariko has prepared the report and he's going to take us through the report. I am aware that he just made me aware actually that the report was not circulated to members. We will request that, have you circulated them already? Okay. We'll request him to take us through the report. Talk to the points, Ariko, so that we can see whether we adopt it or not. But we have to do something today, before Tuesday. Otherwise, we'll have to meet in the morning, Tuesday morning, for adoption.
Chair, I'll come in. Madam Chair, I went through this report with my political party. I have to submit this to my Chief Whip and so forth and discuss it. I am not at liberty to take a decision now. I have to say this is the policy of my party. I don't foresee any problems, but this is just we. I'm not at liberty to do this without liaising with the Chief Whip and the so forth.
Okay.
If we can meet up Tuesday, I'd appreciate if we can do that.
Can we check whether this is the case with other members? It is the case. Meaning that we have to meet on Tuesday at 9. So that we then give members an opportunity. I think it will be just less than an hour meeting for adoption. And then we can then... which means then we can leave the report to members. I've seen that there are typographical mistakes, errors there that need
looked into together with ARICO, and few areas that can be, you know, realigned. But otherwise, we can give the report and not consider it now. Give the report to members. Let members go and acquaint themselves, and then come back. Just a second. We are checking the technicality challenges of what we've just said, while we understand the predicament, but we will, our request is going to find out with the management whether that won't give us a challenge. Mr.
I also wanted to suggest, Comrade Chair, that maybe, although that would be punishing to you and ARICO, maybe we should also say, even over the weekend, those points that members want to communicate should be communicated in a technical manner. But that should produce another draft, you know, so that when we come to the meeting, we still focus on this versus another draft, because that would be better than if everything comes new in the meeting.
Okay, yeah, I think that would speed up the process.
As long as when we make those suggestions, we ourselves acknowledge that they are mere suggestions which may be accepted or may not be accepted by the full meeting.
Okay. Mr. Mabas, I think that's not something to be debated, just something to be done. It's a process matter that members, I don't think they'll find a problem in doing and understanding too. Can you just give us that 5 minutes of consultation and then we'll come back? We have to conclude this today.
Mandate would then just abstain on the vote today. That is what has been done in the past. I don't have a major problem at this stage. So that might be a way of alleviating your practical difficulty that you have to finalize the printing of the document.
Mm. Or fail in which we can table it in the ATC and then amend it if there are any amendments on Tuesday. What about that? Since you're both saying that you don't see any principled challenge with the report, it's just that you need to consult with your principal. It is understandable. But then we are faced, it's just that, you know, we did not have sufficient time, you know, to process things the way we would have loved to. The time allocated to us, actually, it was quite short. If we were to deal with the public entities, I don't think we'd have been ready for Tuesday. But I'm thinking that we should go through the recommendations and see whether you have any major challenge with them. And if you feel you don't, then if the response is negative from Mariko. No, yeah. Then it's okay. We can still table it on Tuesday. So then it means then on Tuesday we'll be dealing with the recommendation areas, just to concretize them and immediately table it in the ATC. Are members satisfied with that? Okay. So there's no need of going through it today. Thank you very much. Members, I think that would then conclude our meeting for today. And let me thank you very much for your attendance and your participation. And thanks specifically members who are really consistent in attending the meeting. We know that other members have challenges of belonging to, you know, being few and having to appear in each and every committee. But really thank members who are consistent, because that helps us in understanding things from your own perspective too. Thank you very much,